You're listening to Courting Justice, a production of Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic in Indianapolis, with your host, Ashley Cavetta. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. We are going to be talking to some of the guys from Brackets for Good, as well as our executive director. Would you like to introduce yourself, Brackets guys?
Sure. This is Matt Duncan, co-founder of Brackets for Good.
And Reed McDowell, partnerships and marketing director of Brackets for Good.
And we also have our executive director here.
Chris Purnell, executive director of the clinic.
Thanks.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming downstairs to join us,
Chris. You're quite welcome.
I wanted to start by, I think maybe some of our listeners might not know what Brackets for Good is. So Reed or Matt, do you mind sharing a little bit about what Brackets is?
So Brackets for Good, we're a nonprofit, and we believe the world's a better place if more people learn about and support causes that make our community or make our world better. And so the way we do that is we use the power of sport. So every March, we host an online bracket-style fundraising tournament that engages donors and gets them excited and learning about causes in the community and gives them a fun way to support those organizations.
Essentially, during Brackets for Good, you've got 64 nonprofits competing during March, and then each week the nonprofit that raised the most money gets to continue on to the next round.
$1 donated to a charity equals 1 point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the matchups are 1 week long. So two organizations are in a competitive matchup. Whichever organization raises the most funds in that week advances to the next round in the tournament. And then the winning organization in each of the tournaments will receive an additional $10,000 from a really generous corporate sponsor.
Great. And each organization actually gets to keep the money that they've raised during the entire run, don't they?
That's right, Ashley. It's called Brackets for Good, not Brackets for Evil. So obviously everybody in the tournament wins, so we want to make sure that the organizations that are out there doing the hard work receive their dollars that they've raised throughout the competition.
Have you guys been doing the tournament now for like 4 or 5 years? How many years?
A lot of years. So we started in
72 years.
We started in 2012, and that was our first year kind of testing whether this thing, this crazy idea was going to work. So we convinced 8 organizations to give it a shot. And then the next year, it expanded to 16. And then our year 3 was where we hit the final kind of 64 field in Indianapolis. And then after that 3rd year is where our expansion kind of took off, where we branched into Louisville and then 5 markets. And then last year with 11 city-based tournaments plus the national tournament.
Do you mind telling me a little about the origin story of Brackets for Good?
Absolutely. So 2011, Butler was in their second national championship back-to-back.
Go Bulldogs!
There we go. Got to plug the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Their second national championship game against the University of Connecticut. Myself and the other Matt were watching the game and having a beer and pizza and kind of chatting about, you know, this energy and excitement that was really building around Butler, and it was the whole underdog story. And our conversation was, well, how do you do that same thing but turn the attention back on the community?
That's exciting that you could take something that you just really enjoyed and then turn it into this fundraiser, not even just for one organization, but for hundreds and hundreds across the country now.
Yeah, it's incredibly rewarding, and it's unbelievable to see something go from a conversation into what it's turned into. And, you know, we wouldn't be anywhere without the nonprofits that participate in the tournament, the sponsors, and the, quite frankly, the outpouring of community support that's happened here in Indiana. I think one of the stories that probably doesn't get told very much about the Brackets for Good story is most of our expansion, in fact, I would call it 98% of our expansion, has literally come from connections in Indianapolis.
Mm.
So I think that says something very distinct about Indiana as a whole and the collaborative nature and people wanting to help each other do good when they see an opportunity.
Philanthropy is changing and I think a catalyst to that change is millennials becoming more and more involved in supporting charitable causes and being more and more important to the like financial sustainability of the charitable sector. And I think millennials have a different expectation of what philanthropy looks like. And Brackets for Good is different. You know, people aren't putting on a suit and tie and going to a gala to support these causes. They're supporting them in a very different way. And there's nothing wrong with the gala, but I think Brackets for Good has been so successful because it's tapping into this fun way to support causes that people care about.
Now, you kind of answered this a little bit, but demographically speaking, what kind of other trends are you seeing during BRCAS, and both to the clinic, Chris, and I guess to the other organizations that you guys are working with?
Of all the traffic, 26% of that traffic is age ranges that would be considered millennials. Older generations, it kind of starts to tail off. In terms of gender, there's probably a 60-40 split between male and female participation in brackets for good. So 60% female. That's pretty different from traditional philanthropy. Usually the gap between male and female giving is usually broader than that. And so we're bringing a male demographic to fundraising than some other fundraising.
I would probably echo the gender disparity at the clinic. Those who are able to give a lot and are able to make those kinds of larger donations versus those who can do the 10, 15, 20, 25. Really, those people come out of the woodwork for Brackets for Good.
Year after year, we see contests that come down or matchups that come down where it could be a dollar that separates them. And for someone who maybe has $10 or $15 to know that $10 or $15 could be magnified for their cause throughout the tournament is one way that I think that we're pulling in more of those smaller donations. I really enjoy the 5 weeks of the tournament. And the reason that I like it so much is because I think it serves as a stark reminder that the organizations need the funds beyond the single event.
People that don't care about basketball, fully not brackets, right? Like they just do. It's something that you do. And taking that and maybe in some small way, like flipping the script and say, yeah, it's not just about your entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's about something bigger in your community. Like, I love that. And I think that that's like true innovation, putting those things together and saying, yeah, this is about something bigger than just, you know, one shining moment that wonderful song.
But I also found that just as someone who is donating to other organizations, maybe I didn't donate to them during the first week, but then I'm like thinking about them the second week, and sorry, Chris, but I did donate to other organizations.
You betrayed us.
No, I'm just kidding. Just... the tough. But I think it did teach me about other organizations that I didn't know as much about. It gave me an opportunity to support some of our partners. I guess all three of you have said gala, but I won't be peer pressured into saying that, and I'm going to call it a gala still.
Ooh,
we do have our Justice for All gala every year, and obviously we are kind of hitting kind of a different demographic.
Yeah. The different opportunities, the different open doors that people can walk through, and Brackets for Good is kind of a nice, for like a better term, gateway drug to, you know.
Well, we like on-ramp to philanthropy, but gateway drug I like that too, I guess.
Love associating us with drugs as much as possible.
You're welcome. I have to say, I feel like I go through withdrawals when the tournament's over. I'm like, what? I don't have anything to check in on. What's going on? Yeah. So
maybe it's apropos. I don't know. But it's
Brackets for Good is entertaining, and it's okay if an individual's first gift to a charitable cause is less altruistic, and is because they want to be part of the entertainment. But then later on, as they continue to develop their relationship with that charity or that cause, those gifts become bigger, whether it's time or money, and they become more altruistic.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun way to introduce people to your organization.
And I think that's true across the board for a lot of human service organizations, you know, like the way that we can present ourselves to a public that may be thinking about giving to us can be fun, it can be lighthearted, but the work that we do is just, it's downright serious.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for almost all the organizations that are on the Brackets for Good bracket. And I think it's like Ree was saying, that's a really winsome way to get people involved. But once they're involved and they're seeing, wow, there is a great deal of injustice in the world, and I can have a small or maybe bigger impact in that arena, I think that's really important.
Are we seeing sustainable funding kind of coming from these more innovative fundraising efforts?
That's a great question.
Yeah, so I can thank you. Great job.
I wrote that question.
So.
High fives all around.
54% of donors say that they're going to give to those organizations again this year. 64% of donors who gave during the tournament say they feel more engaged with the charitable organization that they gave to in the tournament.
Yeah. As far as sustainability goes, I think, you know, somewhere along the path of where these organizations are in their maturity, we've seen organizations raise a third of their operating budget to over 80% of their operating budget in the tournament itself. You know, I think one of the things about innovation and its impact on funding that is very interesting to me is it kind of catches you at places that you don't expect to see it. And I think that's what grabs the attention. Innovation for funding specifically is going to be what continues to drive the nonprofit sector in years to come.
What opportunities has Brackets for Good given places like the clinic, Chris, to kind of present itself in a different way than we normally would?
The idea of legal services can seem kind of like
foreign. Entertaining, very interesting.
Scintillating, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a snore, but I think that what Brackets for Good does is it gives us the opportunity to reach out to markets that we wouldn't be able to reach out to, that just may not hear our message. But that kind of reflects back on us too, because we can say, okay, how can we really tailor this message in a way that makes sense to a broad base audience? From people that may think like, oh yeah, I know about lawyers because I know some awesome lawyer jokes, you know, to a person who, you know, may be in legal services or may be a lawyer themselves. I mean, to be able to say, yes, we need to tailor our story and make it in a way that's palatable to all those groups, it's forced us to innovate in ways that I wouldn't have foreseen 3 years ago.
Well, I know specifically for my position, which is, it's a made-up title, but it's a good one, Creative Engagement Coordinator, which just means that I do things like this podcast, but I also have an opportunity during Brackets for Good to do videos.
Yeah.
And I do videos at other times during the year, but it's the only time when we use a lot of humor in the videos, right. And I end up having to usually be in them because no one else is like, they're like, I've got shame, you know?
I have dignity.
Yeah, and so I'm like, okay, I guess I'll do the videos. And it's kind of fun where we get to make some jokes or poke fun at ourselves. Right. And it's something that I think then can give the community sort of a different view of who we are. Like, you know, people are going through really hard times, but we're also not just presenting ourselves as like, we are the antidote to this grave issue in the world and these poor, sad people. Like, they're human beings who are going through hard times and need a little bit of help, but they're still people.
The work is important, which that doesn't mean that we need to be self-important. I love the videos, and I think the videos really get a lot of traction in Brackets, and I think you're right, it does show a different side of us. I think what it also does is it gives us opportunity, again, just to tell a story in a different way.
Couldn't agree more, because the videos that you guys put out are the highlight of the Indianapolis participation for me.
I'll get you your money later.
I'd take cash. No, but on a serious note, I've learned more about what your cause does through those videos than I've spent investing on your website, because they're quick, very consumable. And I think that is, to your point about innovation and trying to adjust your message so it hits a broader audience, I think your videos are so lighthearted and fun that I can't wait for the next one to come out. And then this year, when you add in that you guys not only found a very creative way to talk about your competition, but mm-hmm. weave it back into your story and how you're working to make the world a better place, just did it for me. It just, as someone from the outside, I got a full picture of you guys come with a ton of personality, you're willing to spotlight other organizations who are doing great work, and you're still able to tell the value that you're bringing to the community.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess at least 25 people have seen it. At minimum, right?
Well, hey, we shoot the Mad Mad Show during the tournament, and we had people coming up to us and saying, oh, we watch your show every day, and we just looked at each other and were like, I can't believe it's not our moms and mother-in-laws. So we're just like high-fiving, that's awesome. Like, that's amazing.
So, you know, we've talked a little bit about kind of the different things that we've done or how we present ourselves during Brackets for Good, but what have you, Matt and Reed, seen as kind of different fundraising methods?
One of the elements of our mission as a nonprofit that's serving other nonprofits in these communities is capacity building. And so we're pretty intentional in the off-season. This is kind of an off-season task, aligning ourselves with partners or building technology that lets the participating nonprofits test drive something new fundraising-wise. Yeah. So in 2017, the tournament that just ended, we introduced MGive, so all the participating nonprofits could use text to donate, referral tracking so you can see, you know, how many people are clicking on the link in your email, Sigster, like email signature stuff. But we try to innovate and create partnerships so participating charities can, again, test drive this pretty innovative online, you know, fundraising technology.
Yeah.
Now, to turn things extremely negative, as people, as listeners always like, have you seen less effective methods? Like, what have we learned about, like, so, okay, this isn't working?
The organizations are maybe the negative part of where you don't see it working is the people that have the one track of saying, you know, I'm reaching out to my base, yeah. and that's where it ends for me. I think that they maybe miss out on a broader chance to really excite others about their cause and their mission.
And I'll say it's tough. It's tough. And I can sympathize with those organizations that are like, you know, I'm just going to reach out to my base and kind of hope for the best and draw from them. And we've certainly done that. I mean, I think that organizations that succeed in brackets, they have a strong base of current supporters that are willing to give generously. But mm-hmm. they're also reaching over and saying, okay, what about the people that wouldn't normally give to organization? We've been trying to do that through social media posts, through just having a bigger presence during mm-hmm. brackets and trying to draw people in during brackets that may want to give later on in the year. Yeah. So maybe they'll give a little bit during brackets or maybe not at all, but interact with us on social media and we can see that.
The taking the digital experience of Brackets for Good and giving an opportunity for board members, staff, volunteers to recruit friends to come in on a Friday and watch the round of the mm-hmm. end has proven extremely successful.
Yeah.
We also know organizations, there was one 2 years ago that reached out to nobody in their current, no current donors. And wow. they raised over $20,000 from wow. brand new, never given donors.
And I would say, kind of going back to the base innovation of brackets, which is you're capitalizing on the competitive spirit of the NCAA brackets. When we were going up against our nemesis, Exodus, just kidding, when we were going up against Exodus, our thought was, well, how do we navigate this? And we thought about different strategies, but we decided, you know what, let's just compete. And I think that there's something about being able to work together with Exodus, because we just kind of both pinged off each other's social media presence, highlight each other's programs.
And they even did a video. They even did a video.
They even did a video with us. Yeah, it was fantastic.
It was very heated. Very heated.
I think the word you said was awkward. Yeah, it was awkward.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful display of both the base innovation. People got competitive, they got excited, and so they gave more money. But also the generative effect of working together as two organizations that we really do partner with them in programmatic services, but now we're also partnering in fundraising.
That's awesome.
It was a cool effect.
That's cool. And I think that really breaks the noise, right? I mean, everyone's yeah. asking for money. Every organization's asking for money. It's different as a supporter of organizations when I see two getting together in a really weird way or, you know, a unique way.
A slightly weird way.
It's different, and it captures people's attention.
We're kind of told that it's not a good idea to think of ourselves as competing for dollars in nonprofit fundraising. But that's absolutely what we're kind of doing a little bit here. So how do we live in that tension of making people excited for this competition, but not focusing too much on that?
The one area that Brackets for Good is a little different in that there are a lot of competitions for fundraising. Ours is more of a game than it is a competition. And yeah. I say that because there's true strategy behind it. You're not necessarily going out trying to raise a ton of money in a month. It's more about how much can we raise to beat our opponent by $1 to continue to stay in the tournament.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's one of the angles that Brackets for Good has done a good job of separating itself from the other fundraising competitions that exist.
Yeah. I think sometimes competition, the context around competition can be negative, but you know, watch an NBA game, watch an NFL game. What do the players do once the game's over?
Shake hands.
They're crying. In the half court, like, they're crying. No, they're hugging, and I mean, they're friends, and I mean, competition can be a powerful force for good, there are some negative connotations to it, but if it's done in a healthy way, it can bring people together, whether that's spectators or participants.
But the overall pie expands for both organizations, and it's not like this zero-sum game where it's like, I got to get more dollars. Mm-hmm. than Exodus, but no, let's all generate more funds together.
Yeah. What are some of the more memorable moments that you guys have had during Brackets for Good? I know for a second you mentioned, like, so each week the round ends at 7:59 p.m. And so a lot of people and a lot of organizations do have watch parties. I don't know if you've had like some exciting moments during those watch parties, like Chris or Matt and Reed. or other moments during the week.
Hearing those stories that I kind of talked about earlier of an organization raising, you know, a third of their budget to 80% of their budget to an organization this year in the Twin Cities said that they really needed a win. They've been around for 70 years. A lot of things that their organization were breaking, and they just didn't feel like people cared. And they got in this competition hoping to raise $500, and they raised well over $20,000.
Wow.
And awesome. The response back from them was, it was less about the money, but it was a lot more about them rallying their troops. And now they know people care and that they're really engaged with their cause. And before, they didn't have that opportunity. So those are the things that, you know, give me goosebumps and chills and make me want to get up and spend every waking moment I have to try and figure out how we take the next evolution for Brackets for Good.
Up until the start of the 2017 tournament, we as Brackets for Good helped or have been a part of raising $2.75 million for charities, you know, in the tournaments in history. Well, this year, it was in the championship round. We were all together. It was in the evening. We actually, this year alone, surpassed that number.
Wow.
And so we were, as a team, tracking.
Goodness gracious.
We were tracking that number. We're like, in 1 year, are we going to surpass what has been raised in 5 years? And we did, and we kind of were all together. And yeah, talking about goosebumps. Again, goosebumps, because, I mean, whether it's the staff or volunteers, we pour a lot of ourselves into this, and it was just incredible for it's growing so fast and it's doing so much good in these communities that we were able to in 1 year out fundraise what's been raised in 5 previous years, and
that's amazing.
That was a great moment for me this year.
Well, I know that like for the clinic, for the, you know, we've usually raised about 20 grand for the past few years, and then this year we raised like what, $35,000
and $4.
I don't want to brag, but that floor was me.
It took us over the line.
Yeah.
My favorite memory is when we actually made it past round two into round three, and we had this wonderful watch party at one of our board members' law firms. And we were there together with our families and our friends and clinic staff members, and just being able to like have this wonderfully pure celebratory moment of we actually busted through the ceiling that we thought we'd never get through. So it was awesome. A powerful moment.
Well, we love hearing those stories too. So the more stories that we hear from the organizations participating, I mean, definitely fuels our fire to continue to push forward. So we love it.
Yeah, and Chris, what does it mean that we raised $35,000? What does that mean for the clinic?
Well, it means a lot. It means a lot. So the clinic, we are largely a grant-driven organization. So getting undesignated dollars, which is what Brackets for Good gives us, it's people making donations not to a particular program or a particular staff member, but just to the neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic and our mission, it's a huge deal because we can put those dollars to their best intended use. And so $35,000, like, it costs us about $1,000 to do an asylum case. Asylum is when a person comes to this country, they're fleeing persecution, almost certain death in their home countries, and they're coming here seeking shelter. It costs about $1,000 to process that case. That's 35 people. 35 people who could have almost literally a life-saving intervention from the neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic. For people that are domestic violence survivors and want to get custody of their kids, 140 of those. 140 men and women who are able to keep their children safe from their abusers. So it's a powerful thing, and we're just absolutely grateful for the platform and the ability to raise that much money.
I know for me it was like really exciting when we got to support at 16, and I remember thinking like, oh, we have a couple people we know are probably going to donate tonight. And I remember looking at you, Chris, and at the end of the third round, and although we just lost, we were really happy for our friends over at Exodus Refugee that that they'd won, but also bitter. Also very, very bitter.
It was 50-50.
But I remember looking at you, Chris, and you're like, I don't know where these donations came from.
Yeah.
You were like, I don't, you know, that is, I did not expect us to raise this
absolutely
much money
not.
Right now. So people really got hyped up about the competition. People were giving money that was unexpected. So, and money that will help people in this very community.
This idea of unrestricted dollars and allowing the organizations to make the best use of those dollars. A lot of times when we've gone through the grant process, which no one funds a funder, which I think we've all realized by now from all the no's we've gotten. But the thing that's interesting is that I think especially early on, there's this big perception of no one wants to pay your operating costs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To now, it's turning more into an investment. And I think that what's exciting about that and that shift is now people are finally getting that if they want this organization to continue to grow and to continue to have the amazing impact they have, they've got to keep lights on. They got to hire good staff. They have to continue to pay those good staff. They have to provide those staff with benefits. And knowing that every organization is doing the best they can to be good stewards of those dollars means that that impact can continue to carry on.
And Chris, how do you think that that has maybe affected the way that the clinic is approaching fundraising?
I think it's made us more creative. I think it's made us more nimble. And I think it's made our fundraising calendar make a little more sense.
You know, I think kind of a parting thought is, you know, fundraising should be fun. And we should be doing everything we possibly can to pull people toward the exciting things that we're doing to help others in the community.
We feel like we're part of your team, right? So we do this because we work so hard because we think that what we're doing makes the world a better place. Yeah. But there's a degree of separation between what we do every day and, like, impacting people's lives. So we feel like you're part of our team and what we can do a little bit, what we can do a little bit to help you guys impact the lives of the people that you serve. We feel like we're serving alongside you.
We're so grateful to you guys for coming out here today and chatting with us about the work that you do and how you're getting people amped up about nonprofits in their community. And yeah, we just wish you the best of luck. Can't wait to keep seeing Brackets for Good expand. Thank you guys for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Courting Justice, a production of Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic. Don't forget to follow us on social media at NC Legal Clinic.